Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. I'm your host, Em Robertson, and I'm so stoked that you're tuning in. Trail Culture is already a year old, and we're on to season two of the podcast episodes. I can't believe how the last year has flown by. Thank you to each and every one of you for following along, listening to the episodes, giving feedback. I really couldn't have done any of this without all of you. As you all know, season two of Trail Culture is fueled by Carbon Endurance. They are an endurance sport consulting company, and they really have you covered in terms of fuel and hydration for all of your performance needs. It's amazing to be able to work with a team who understand athletes, understand the trail space, and are working to ensure that athletes can have their best training and racing performances possible. Really excited about that partnership. Go and check them out. The details are in the show notes. I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and I'll see you back here next week for our next one. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. Season 2 really has been full of incredible guests so far, and today I'm particularly excited because I get to meet and chat to one of my heroes. She really is a legend in the South African trail community, and I know people are very excited that she is back for a little bit. So yeah, she's made a return to SA soil after a racing season in Europe this summer. She's an ultra runner, a vet, a conservationist, and an artist. So really well-rounded, and she can be found on the start line of some of the toughest races, or adventuring around New Zealand in her mobile home. And or painting in between the short gaps that she has between her crazy work hours, which she's going to talk to us a little bit more about. So I'm super excited and stoked to welcome Naomi Brandt today. Yeah, thanks for joining us during your time in South Africa.
Thanks for having me. Good for catching me in this small little while that I'm here.
I know, we were just chatting about the community of people that want to see you and coming back and doing a local lap like you used to. Has it been good to be home?
It's like living in a dream. I think when I'm overseas, I constantly long back to being here. And when I'm here, it's like it's almost unreal. And just seeing so many people. I'm more tired when I leave South Africa, even though it's often a holiday, because I'm just trying to squeeze. I have like 5 appointments a day to try and see everyone. The most coffees I've had in a while.
Lots of coffees, but lots of runs.
It's all worth it. I'll live from that for the next couple of months.
That's so cool.
Yes.
And we are going to chat a little bit about your SAFA trail community and your move, but just to kind of give us the background is a little bit of who you are. How did you find yourself in the trail running space? Tell us a bit about your upbringing and your background with sport.
I was super, super lucky. I had parents that were runners. My mom was joking. She ran my first 21K with me in her belly. She was pregnant. She didn't know. So I started really early.
Nice.
Yes. On the running scene. They did Two Oceans and stuff like that. Both really sporty people. And when I was growing up, we relaxed because we farm. We relaxed by means of going outdoors and camping in the bush and going cycling. And so my go-to relax or hobby has always been sport. And I did lots of sport in school. I realized I'm competitive, got a bit addicted to it. And I was at Honestepoort in my first year doing vet school. And there was a race up in Pretoria. And I heard of trail running and African X and all the big main old races. And I went over there to go and try it. And I come from a road running. So I did, for Marty's, I ran 21Ks and stuff like that. So I was very much a fast runner, or wanted to be a fast runner. And I was like, what is this? There's so many rocks. I don't know how people run here. And I slowly got addicted to the people, mostly. I think it's more, especially while being in vet school, I didn't realize there are so many people like me who like the outdoors. I was drawn to it like a moth to a flame. And the more I did, the more I realized, I want to do the really long stuff. I saw Addo on the TV once and I was like, that, like headlamps and shit, that's going to be me. So I think it just naturally, it chose me. I don't think I chose it. It chose me. All the things sort of through my upbringing and the type of people I mixed with and a couple of coaches and the sportiness that I've always, I think, I did gymnastics and all sorts of things from a really young age. So I think the combo of that. But once you get into trail running, there's no turning back. Yeah, yes, exactly.
And I mean, Naomi, the longer distances, that's, I think, few people will go from, okay, I did one trail run to I want to run 100 miles. And I think you've done more than that as well and multi-day things. Yeah, I mean, and so when was your first long ultra race?
I did a couple of like crazy, I ran in school, I ran a couple of crazy for my age. I did like, I would do a big 30 or 50K run for fun and people thought I was crazy. But my first 100 miler was 2017, February.
Okay.
So I always did longer stuff and a lot of training anyway. And I couldn't believe that there's such a long race. And I think it's because I've always felt I'm not very fast, but I can carry on. I can do this suffer thing for very long. And so once I did Addo, I realized I did UTCT 100K before that, but I think Addo was my first 100 miler. And the two of them together just, yeah, I was sold. I like the long suffering. I feel like you go talk to your God, then you're in a happy place, then you think you're going to die. It's the various emotions you work through. And when you do come out the other side, you're always a changed person. I think that's what draws me to it, is that it's, you can't just go run it. You have to be prepared to go to very dark spaces and dig your way back out of it. And that you can then use in your everyday life.
You are definitely someone who loves the sport. I was actually saying, I think to Seamus, I was telling him that you're coming onto the podcast and he's like, oh, that's so cool. And I was like, I have mad respect for anybody who runs the UTCT 100 miler with less than 3 weeks notice. I think that was like at your wedding. Was it last year? 2 years ago, where Stu Cardigan's like, surprise, I'm giving you the wedding present and it's a 100 miler race entry.
Absolutely. And knowing me, I mean, that was the best gift ever. But I was standing on the start line. And I thought, smooth, Naomi, this is going to be probably the most suffering. And I tell you, that 100 miler is not one that you want to go and do unprepared. It's the most pain I've ever experienced in my legs. I was on the contour path, having lived in Cape Town, having run the contour path a million times, and I could not will myself to run. I was like, okay, in 5 seconds, I'm going to just run 5 meters. And I could, if my phone was on, which luckily it died, I would have probably called for help because I would have gone fast, I think, backwards. But I'm so glad I did it. With that race specifically, I think I'm very much about protecting your body, not getting injured. But with that race, I think the local people and the local trail community is what got me into the sport and what drives me always, doesn't matter where in the world I am. And I ran on love. It's like my energy. The people you see next to the roads, people that went to school with me, they, like, I've never seen them for like 20 years or something.
Yeah.
My parents are always there. My dad's always there. So it's like a no-brainer for me. Yeah. So yeah, the suffering is less important. But yeah, I was very sore.
key ingredients if you want to run 100 miles, have your people along the way, definitely.
You can't do it without it, actually. So,
yeah. And I mean, Naomi, you've run a variety of races. I mean, from towing the start line at a lot of local South African ones, your like African X, UTD, UTCT, Addo, and then making the move overseas, and even now spending some time racing in Europe. I know you've had some good results and disappointing ones, but on hectic start lines like the Lavaredo Ultra Trail, which is next level, how do you choose your races? And I even remember seeing a this crazy story of you on Instagram where you were trying to fly to an ultra, one miler, I think, was it in Australia? And then your flight was delayed and this, and I think you had like, you literally arrived, registered and ran. And I was like, oh my gosh. So how do you use your image?
I think when I started doing it, I chose the hardest thing I could find just because obviously, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it proper, which is always my way of looking at it. And then I started getting competitive. And I think then you choose races where you know if you do well, I mean, it's good exposure and all of us like looking for sponsors and stuff like that. But in the last couple of years, that's changed a bit again for me. One, because I live at the outer skirts of the world. And I didn't know that going to New Zealand, that it's really, really hard getting to races. I can literally write a book about visas, flight cancellations. Like, I've had it all. Someone, 2-3 years ago, I was going to UTMB. And sadly, very sadly, someone passed away on one of the flights. But it delayed my whole travel by 2 days. And so it took me 4 days to get to Europe. And then I got sick because my body was just one hell. 2 days before or a couple of days before UTMB. And then, I mean, you spend all the time getting there. So recently, I've had to choose races if I want to do well. That's a bit closer.
Mm.
And then we have, and obviously it's expensive. It's so expensive to go to Europe or to come to South Africa. So I have to choose races that are close to get some stones and then choose maybe one race in Europe. If I had my way, I would have probably done, because I don't like doing certain races like over and over again. I like the surprise element. UTCT is probably the only race that I've done more than 5 times because it's so special to me. But otherwise, I will choose new challenges because what drives me in 100 miles is what's around the next corner. And if you know, it's not so exciting. Yeah. It's harder.
I know exactly where I'm about to
get. Yes. So, I think it's changed during according to my circumstances a bit. But in the future, now that I have a bit more freedom, I recently started locoming. So it's changed my job a bit, my leave, which is a major thing as well. I'd probably go back to what drives me the most, which is really epic hard races that are a bit more of a challenge because I can't do it forever and there's so many I still want to do.
Yeah,
so.
That's cool. So, yeah. I love that looking forward challenge.
Yes.
And actually, Naomi, tell us a little bit about your job. I think you're someone who, it strikes me as you never stop moving. But something I just appreciate about you and one of the things that I was like, I know we'll be able to chat about is you don't glamorize the sport, like unnecessarily. I think you celebrate it when the moments are good. But I like your honesty on social media where you're like, I woke up, I don't know, my trail shoes got rained on. I forgot to buy new groceries because I worked until late. I've slept for 4 hours. I'm going to try go for my run and see what happens in amongst your busy kind of job. So, yeah, I appreciate that. But, yeah, chat to us a bit about your work and how that throws a spanner in the works.
That's a tough one. So when I was in vet school, first of all, I did 100 million things before eventually giving into to going to vet school because I knew my sister's a vet. I knew it's going to be a massive commitment. Vet school itself and then being a vet. I think it's an industry where what people think of it is completely different to what's behind the door. It's a very, very hectic, on your feet, emotionally taxing and very long hours. There's actually not a lot of people know that it's one of the jobs with a higher suicide rate. So because of the type of person, it's usually like quite a soft person that likes to help people and animals. Like you can picture the kind of person. And then it's an industry that'll take as much as it can. So with running, obviously, there's a lot of time that I can't, like, I can't train because I'm on call or I can't train because I worked a 12-hour day. I was on my feet all day. A couple of years ago, I was in sole charge of a practice because everyone left because of some bad working circumstances. And I literally, I counted 1 week, I did surgery for more than 24, 5 hours, which in human surgery, like there would be laws to let you rest before you're allowed to do more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this industry, rewarding as it is to help animals, it's probably the most rewarding and hardest job, because you just see everything in a day. You see a new puppy, you see people putting a dog down that's been their companion for 13 years. Like it's such an emotional roller coaster. And running's been my saving grace, but it's also been hard for me because I'm so competitive to rock up to a race. And I know if I trained harder for this, I would have done so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this year, I know we'll chat more about this year later, but this year I finally realized it's becoming so competitive, the running, ultra trail running, that I can't use that last few, and I don't enjoy it that way either. So I'm trying to balance it a bit better, but sure, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard doing both, for sure.
Yeah, I think the having your kind of emotions taxed at work and then having to show up and be brave in long training sessions is hectic. And I think something also that you're facing was like navigating a new place, a shift, moving away from your community. And I mean, what made you and Xavier choose to move to New Zealand?
We'd lived 1 year in Cape Town. We decided we're definitely not anti-South Africa. I think both of us, our hearts are 100% here. I'm a wildlife fanatic. We love our people. But we wanted to go see, if we go overseas, like what else is there for us? Xavier's a trail photographer, he used to be. And I wanted to improve myself a little bit after my CCS year. So it was more a job-driven move to the UK. Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened and my two sisters moved to Oceania. So Australia, New Zealand. And I got became very aware of like how important family is.
Mm.
And New Zealand is probably one of the best places to train in the world. It's wild and there's mountains. The south of New Zealand is basically Europe without people.
Yeah.
Insanely beautiful trails for days and years. And I think we were drawn to the fact that there's safety and trails for days. My family's there. And then obviously my degree is only accepted in Australia, New Zealand, the UK, and a couple of other countries like Singapore and Hong Kong. So we wanted to just see, if we go for a couple of years, what can we learn? And we have learned a lot. One of the things being that the trail running industry is actually quite small there. Things like that, we didn't know. But yeah, I think those are the main drivers for us to make the big leap. And once you've leapt, you can't just come back. So you have to give it a little bit of time. And that's why we've been there for, I can't believe it, almost 4 years, five
that's
years.
That's crazy.
It's a long time.
Oh, 5 years.
Yes, we left 2020 was COVID in the UK. And then we came back for a brief little bit, 2021, and then we went to New Zealand. So it's been a long time.
And I mean, just like you see the trail, like running isn't as big of a sport there as of yet. So trail community, I mean, to go from what it is in Cape Town to there, how was that?
I was very surprised. I think as a South African, we always picture New Zealand being sport, like sport mania. I don't know. You expect everyone to be really, really fit and run and rugby and paddle everywhere, because I think that's a picture you have of New Zealand. But the trail industry is really, really small. There's very passionate people and very cool races, but not a lot. There will be maybe 60 or 80 people rock up. It's still in its infancy. The media is still in its infancy.
Mm.
So there's one or two really big races like Tarawera. But if you think about the New Zealand trail runners, the elite runners like Dan and Ruth, they mostly race overseas and spend a lot of time there because that's where it all happens for them. They go back home to train maybe for a little bit or in rest periods, but there's not enough races and I think sponsors and things like that there to sustain people. So it's just a small island, I think.
Yeah.
And it still has ways to go. There's definitely one of my sponsors, La Sportiva, is trying to have like develop maybe a sky running series, which would work so wonderful there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's getting like, with our races here, it's affordable because there's often big sponsors involved, whereas yeah. there is not. So the races are incredibly expensive and hard to get to because they're public transport. It's an island. It's got a big mountain in the middle.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to get to. So for me, it'll often cost almost as much to participate in a New Zealand race than to go overseas. So obviously I'm going to go overseas and do that if I can. So yeah, it's definitely something that has potential. But yeah. Not there yet.
No, I think, we can segue into this as I wanted to chat to you about your, like, adventure as a lifestyle, because I think I had a picture of what New Zealand was like, and then watching your stories, I was like, wow, it's not how I pictured it. I think I've got friends who live in Auckland, and I was just like, oh, it's a city, and it's just a green city. And then seeing you find mountains and snow and like insane running routes and where you just don't see anyone for days and days. I was like, that's next level. Tell us, out of the adventures that you have and the things that you and Xavier have done since you've been there, what has been a highlight for you in exploring New Zealand?
Wow. I think just coming from the European Alps, like alpine environments, it's not something we grew up with. We have mountains here, but in alpine environments, the amount of like biomes, like how nature changes from the bottom to the top, how quickly you can get into a potentially dangerous situation, the rivers, the types of like, I don't think sports you can do attached to that, like skiing and, pack rafting. I mean, I've never in my life done any sort of rafting, and there it's like a normal sport. So I think exploring out of my comfort zone, very much out of my comfort zone, especially in snow, exploring like new types of adventures, multi-day things, that would be hard to do, I think, here because of, I don't know, logistics, maybe safety, things like that. But being able to connect these massive mountain ranges with rivers and roads. And so that's been very, very cool. I think when I thought about this question, I was like, probably the highlight is doing it with Xavier. I think we're very much rely on each other because we're there by ourselves. And I'm so lucky to have a person that's just as adventurous. And I think if you have one person there and they're like you in terms of, I mean, the world's open for you. You can do anything and everything. And we've built so many memories. I think one day we can write a book about the stuff we did together, which has been so cool. I think it's brought us together, and it's literally like memories that we can treasure forever. Stuff that we did, like go over 5 passes in 3 days, sleep a couple of days, get eaten by sand flies, fall off the mountain, like that kind of thing when you're... You didn't plan it for it to be that adventurous, but you come out the other side and you're like, I'm alive. So, yeah.
And I mean, you guys even chose an adventurous way to live. Please tell us more about your mobile home tell us about that choice. And then what has surprised you the most about living in a van?
Oh, such a cool... I don't know. I don't think we expected half the like things that we're going to learn or adventure it's going to be. So basically finding accommodation in New Zealand is hard. And we stayed in a old home that we had to paint to be able to live there that a guy basically passed away in, which was a very spooky old place. Then we stayed in a yurt. It was the Airbnb in someone's backyard. And Xavier kept looking at like boat houses and vans. And we were trying to find a way to live where I worked, but not like pay all my salary into rent. Yeah. And we found this 1998 Mazda truck. And I called her Moomin because she's white. Looks basically, being an artist, I don't like all white things, but we couldn't paint it. So it's this big white truck. Not pretty, not fast. But yeah, we moved all our stuff in there. The first day I was in tears. I was like, how am I supposed to get all of my life into this? And Xavier and I walk into each other at least twice a day. It's a very small space. It's like the middle between the couches and stuff is like a meter by maybe 3 meters. That's our walking space. You can maybe do a couple of sit-ups in the middle, but like no room for anything else. But yeah, what a blast. We discovered, I think most of all, I've always preached like mindful living and being with Patagonia. Like I've decided I'm going to try and make my impact less. But if you live in a motorhome like that, you basically have no choice. And it forces you to do those things that you always want to do, but it almost seems too hard. Like using water sparingly, we have to because we have a tank. And if you use too much water, somebody has to go stand outside with a hose pipe and fill it back up. And Nobody wants to do that. Xavier and I play Ching Chong Cha, who's going to do that in the winter because it's cold. Or things like thinking about your waste, like same thing. We have one little dustbin and we're not always in a place to throw stuff away. So you've got to think buying food, like we never ever have extra stuff. We eat everything we buy because there's just no room to throw big stuff away that's potentially smelly. The things you buy, everything we buy, we've got to justify it. So you can't, as a girl, I can't just go shopping. I can buy something, but then I have to throw something out because we have so little space.
Yeah.
So it's been, I mean, it sounds la-di-da, but really for me, as someone who wants to make my impact less, I've realized that you can actually do it. You don't need a lot. You don't need a bunch of furniture and lots of clothes to make you happy. If you're an outdoors person, if you're spending most of your time outside, you need a place to sleep, a place to make food, a place to go to the toilet, and a place to shower. And if that's in a river because your shower's like tank is empty, then that's amazing. Like, And we've become very in tune with nature, I think, because we live basically in a glorified tent. Some days, the weather and everything, you're very in tune with Mother Nature's in control. We're just the smidge. You have to take care of nature. You have to think about your impact every day. So I think that's been the cool part. We won't live in the motorhome forever, but I think that's been a big lesson for us. We now go on holiday or stay in places, and it's so big for us. We're like, what do you do with all this space? Why you have to fill it with furniture that you then have to buy. And then So it's been quite cool to learn that we can actually get by with very little.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool the lessons that you would learn in the motorhome that you would take with you
absolutely
when moving anywhere else, you know, still taking care of your impact on the environment, using water. I mean, if you can do all of those things, why not live like that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's very good for for a marriage as well. I can't kick him out. I can't tell him to go to another room. I can't slam a door. So we have to sort out our shit. Otherwise, we lie on these, like, pathetic little couches, which is our bed that we like make every day, and stare at each other angrily. So, very small space, not a lot of room for a lot of bullshit. So we've got to be kind to each other and sort out our stuff, which is very cool as well.
Improve communication.
Yes,
skills,
exactly. Exactly.
Naomi, when you guys moved there, were there certain things you wanted to see and do? I mean, you mentioned Five Passes now, and I can't think of the names, but I've seen, again, on social media, you've had like amazing adventures in the snow, you've been skiing, you've done, there was one run, I think I followed you, you were trying to find your way and you got lost in it, you were in this like giant fern forest, and there's just like a diversity to New Zealand trail-wise that's very interesting to me. And have you guys kind of chatted to people who've pointed you in the direction of things you didn't know existed?
I think that's the beauty of it. There's wild, undiscovered, and like very few people go there wilderness. So we've you look on a map, they've got very, very good maps that only sort of they develop in New Zealand, the topo maps, and you look at it and you just see these trails and you try and connect them. And then you talk to people and then they've done these challenges before.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, we've got a very long list on our fridge. And it's sometimes just a river you want to go see, or a glacier lake, or a pass you want to cross. But there's definitely these, like, there's something called the Serpentine, which is a range of mountains that you connect with, like passes and things like that. There's five passes. There is the Gillespie Loop, which we still want to go and do. But the river's got to be low enough. Otherwise, you have to take a ferry. So there's definitely the adventurous people down there. Definitely connect like these amazing trails and make multi-day adventures. And our list is still very long. I think we've done a lot of things already, but we could still, like Xavier said, as long as we're there, we're going to try and do as many as we can. That's if really the weather permits.
Yes.
Because there's a big part of the year where the mountains are covered in snow and you basically can either ski or you have to sort of be low down for safety. Mm. So we're very much still learning the ski thing. We've fallen very, very hard, but we try. I think it's hard to do that with trail running because I'm so scared of getting injured, which I have. I did fall off a slope and hurt myself a bit. But we'll definitely work on it while we're there.
And training environment, Naomi, how is that like? Was it the type of environment that could prepare you for the European racing season? Was that quite challenging?
I think what I didn't realize, like I just said, from 800 meters and up, there's snow in the winter. And so the first time I did Laverito, it started snowing very early. So it started snowing in May, and they actually had the most snow they had in a couple of years in the little town where we live. And so I had to do hill repeats, which I would have done in South Africa to prepare for Europe. I was like, oh, I feel cheated. But for the rest of the year, like for Tarawera, for instance, they've got these massive networks of river trails. And Tarawera is quite runnable. I think almost 75% of it, you can literally like bomb, you can run. Of the 100K, 100 miler, maybe less so. So there's definitely, for that, there's like ample training ground. Same with Otter Trail Australia, also very, like, very runnable route, mostly like jeep track and big wide open trails. But for the European scene, I can train in summer, but when I have to race, it's in winter, basically. It's just that time of the year that's a bit tricky. So I now know that, and that's why I went this year a bit earlier to Europe to be able to actually go to up to those heights and do some altitude training, which I think was quite necessary.
And Naomi, I think something that comes to mind when I think about how you race is that you are very brave, and you pick races that are, like you mentioned earlier, a challenge. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it properly and go find the biggest mountains or the hardest climbs. And you still manage to toe the line as well in incredibly competitive fields, sometimes with a less than ideal build-up. And I think this past season, I mean, you've had some ups and some downs and disappointments. But yeah, take us through a little bit of how this season was in Europe for you.
It's a hard one. I'm still processing through UTMB. Obviously, I started trail running way back, and I've always run, and I always, there's always a part of me that I've believed that I could do so much better. Like in South Africa, if I ran 100 mile, chances I'll be on the podium because there's not a lot of people doing it. But I was one of the first, I think one of the first ultra trail women that went overseas to go and compete. Like, I think when I did Madeira, there wasn't a lot of girls just doing that. So I've always wanted to be on an international stage and actually like make something of my trail running. So I waited really, really long to do Europe and to be able to afford it, to take off work. And the result was not at all what I wanted. Yeah. I Laverito I expected because I worked really, really hard. I had to work, I think I was on call for 14 days straight or something to be able to afford going to Europe. So I knew it wasn't going to be a great race and I accepted that. But UTMB, I think I probably was the fittest that I've ever been, done the most vert that I've ever done, the most distance, the most consistent. So I think that's one of the things with ultra trail running that you have to like accept that you could do everything right and it could still not go according to plan.
Yeah.
And if you don't enjoy the journey up to the race, then, I mean, chances are something might go wrong in the race. Then what are you doing? Like, you actually have to enjoy the process and the system and not just the result, which I did. And I'm glad I actually told myself every single day, because I waited so long, I'm so lucky to be here. I focused on the small wins of my personal like progress, because I know what that was. Like,
yeah.
Nobody will know except me and my coach forever how fit I really was and how well I could have done. But I think you've got to sometimes think, why am I doing this sport? What does winning look like for me? And I made peace with my wins were being consistent and things like that, that I haven't been able to achieve in a couple of years now. But the race itself was probably one of the hardest. Like, walking in 3 a.m. in the morning was probably the saddest I've ever been at the end of an ultra trail. Just that expectation that was crushed. I'm glad I finished it. But, yeah, it hasn't been an easy one to process.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, like, you always learn something that you can then take to your next race. And realizing more and more now that I know why I'm doing it. I did for a while lose myself. I think all elites do at one point. You start doing it for other people and for extrinsic value. Like, you want people to be impressed. You try and impress sponsors. There's pressure. And if you can bring it back to intrinsic, like, I want to be the type of person that can finish a 100-miler, it immediately takes that, but I have to be in the top 10. Takes that away. Like, you've got to bring it back. And then often I've heard stories where that's where you actually then do better in the end, because your reasons are the right reasons.
Yeah.
Trying and being in the middle of a very shitty situation like that, being in the middle of nowhere, suffering through 100-miler and thinking everyone's going to be so disappointed, makes it even harder. But thinking like, I am still doing 100-miler. I'm still trying my best, even though everything's against me. That gives you the strength to do so many other things in life that's hard.
Yeah.
So it's just changing that from the extrinsic to the intrinsic. Mm-hmm. And constantly, you have to do that constantly, because you go to a race start and there's lots of cameras and there's like an announcement that says, this is a elite. And all of that goes out the window and you have to then bring it back.
Yes.
So it's not a quick fix. It's a continuous process where you have to always talk to yourself, bring it back to yourself.
And so, we spoke a little bit about with the growth of the sport, the increased like media presence and coverage, which has obviously got its pros, but the cons are also just that kind of intense feeling of pressure and like the world is watching. And do you feel like that had an effect at all as you stood on the UTMB start line? I mean, you've done the race before, and you did mention it's grown significantly since that first year.
Well, I think everyone will understand this that listens to this podcast. Standing in front of, I don't know how many runners were there, but it's a sea of people. And I look to my right and there's Amanda Basham, Lucy Bartholomew, like my top 10 favorite, like, hero.
Yes.
Thinking, what the hell am I doing here? Like, am I in the wrong?
Yeah.
I'm in the wrong tier here. I should not be here. And then what happened this year even is they had the, I want to say, super elites, like girls with a very, very high score, UTMB score, and then the second tier. And I was actually in the second tier for the first time. Obviously, didn't have the nicest year. And there wasn't enough people in front, so they opened it up. So I was literally almost in front of that crowd.
Yeah.
And I wasn't actually that stressed. I think I did a lot of inner work before UTMB to be able to handle that, because I hadn't in the past. I started too fast because you feel like you have to run flat out. But yeah, I think that it does get to you. You're obviously aware of this massive race that it is. Everyone that comes out to watch it, if you do well, the people that I followed, it does open up a lot of doors.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, for sure. I think if you're not influenced by that, you're either either dead or dumb. I don't know. I think it has an influence. But yeah, I think it's also something to my coach always tells me. If you want to race at that level, you've got to, it's just like learning to do everything else. You've got to learn to adapt and handle that pressure. And for me, it's definitely been a continuous battle. But I think I'm getting better at it, to kind of focus, hone in on myself and just be calm and think, why am I here? Why am I doing this? All of that I've been, but it's a practice.
Yeah. And unpacking the race, I mean, obviously it's not something that you just think about once and then, cool, tick the box, it's, I've figured out what happened. Have you managed to kind of unpack? I mean, you mentioned you were fit, you were ready. And I think from my side, for us, it's still like this incredible feat that you went, you towed the line, you raced on that stage, you kept it together and that you finished. It's like that shows me that we can do hard stuff. But I know you've mentioned you're competitive and it wasn't the expectation that you had on the day. So have you managed to kind of figure out with your coach and the people you're getting advice from, kind of what do you think happened?
I think we've figured out it's not one thing. It's probably a combination of things. What I can say is that I actually started, the first thing that people will say is maybe you started too fast. I did start, it's actually quite uncanny. I ran exactly the same times as I did in 2019 and 2022. To almost a second,
wow.
But I was almost three times less fit. So I was actually holding myself back quite sufficiently, yes. for my level of fitness. But I think something that I've been struggling with, and that now that everyone is really focusing on the small details, like the lightweightness of everything, the shoes you're running in has to have this plate and that thing, and the nutrition, and literally to a T works out their nutrition. I am not that good a detail person. I run according to feel. And so I tried in UTMB to be more, have more of a plan with my nutrition, like to the T workout, what do I need to eat where calories wise. And I think I don't usually train like that, even though I tried a little bit to train and prepare for the race with the nutrition. I didn't try anything new or anything like that. But I think the amount of carbs you try and squeeze into your body, and I think the added thing of it was an incredibly hot day. There were so many people that had gut issues because of it. Probably just not taking enough salts, as simple as that. I'm a Tailwind ambassador. I think you can run on that if you can't eat, but I pushed it a little bit too far before I realized I was probably massively dehydrated. And then I gagged for about 20 hours. It's the first time ever that I usually, it's gross. I usually just throw up and then I carry on. But this time, nothing wanted to come out. So you literally run and your stomach muscles are sore and you have no energy because everything you eat and drink, you're gagging. So you want to avoid that so you don't eat and drink. So I think all in all, probably as simple as salts.
Yeah.
But it's a combination of things. I think once you realize you're not on your time track. I mean, I was up until 150Ks, I was still at a 27-hour finish, which was more or less the aim, maybe that, maybe faster. And then it just all of a sudden fell apart. And then that mentally is so hard. Yeah. Like there's definitely a physical side, but there's a mental side of like, okay, now I'm going to have to slog this out for another, I don't know how many hours.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I mean, that's where the training comes in, is being able to do that on an ideal day.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And, I mean, Naomi, how do you come back from a disappointment like that? I feel like you are quite a resilient person, but there was a lot of sacrifice and work that went into this particular season, starting ages ago, not just with the training, but like personal prep and this and that. And I feel like we know it's worth it. And I'm sure that you are like, this is still the greatest sport. But they are, I mean, in that last 30Ks, you were probably like, I'm ready to throw in the towel.
Never again.
Never do this again. Yeah, I'm going to take up knitting and sit on my couch.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, chat to us a bit about that process.
I think it was in COVID that I realized, because I counted the other day, there was almost about, I think, 30 races in total that got cancelled for me.
Oh,
some of it was
word.
The same race that got cancelled a couple of times, but there was 30 international big races that I trained for that didn't happen over the, so we had COVID in the UK, a little bit in South Africa, and then for another 2 years in New Zealand. So we had a very long stint of restrictions. And I then realized through all of that, my why.
Mm.
It's a hard way of realizing it, but I realized it doesn't matter if I'm on a layover and there's a treadmill, or I am basically just running on the tar road back home after work. Like, running to me is so part of who I am. And I, even though I've tried to get away from it, it's only a week and then I'm like, oh, I've got to go for a run.
Yeah.
So even my husband calls me a border collie, because I struggle to sit still. And I think running is my healthy way of like processing, giving my creative brain some time to work. I always think of my best ideas while I'm running.
Mm.
So there's that. And I think this is the hard part that I think I usually just like sort of the quiet voice inside keep to myself and like we'll chat to my coach. But like, I think you've got to believe in yourself. And I've always had this belief that I can do well. And damn, this year has like proven me wrong so many times that it does get to a point that I was running the last bit of UTMP and I was like, I'm going to just quit running. I'm done now. Mm. Like, I've tried my best now. Oh, no, I'm done. But there's still this belief that I can still do very well. And I think you have to kind of be your own biggest fan and have to have that like inner drive. And it's not for anyone else. It's a me goal. Like,
yeah.
I think I can run UTMB in like this many hours, or I think I can still do this and this and this. And I think while I still can, while I'm able, like, I'd love to try. So yeah, it's a two-part thing. I'm addicted to running. It's one of my favorite things to do. The people, the culture, the way of living, the opportunities it's opened up for me. And the other part of it is just that I still believe that there's things that I can achieve and do for myself.
Mm.
And I know how much in the past that's helped me to battle through my job, personal relationships, things that are hard. So it's not easy to get up, but I think because it's a drive that comes from within, there's almost not a choice. It happens naturally every time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's for, if I can give any advice to someone that has to get up after a big, big fall, is searching for your why. And when you find your why, then that will drive you. And
yeah.
For the right, yeah, it will come naturally. It won't be a forced effort.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Making sure that you run for those reasons and
exactly.
not for the external pressures that you
exactly.
mentioned. Even, yeah, I think people get caught up in that. And it takes one moment of hitting your head to go, flip, I was focused on the wrong thing going into this race. Yeah.
Exactly. I spoke to someone yesterday at Tuesday Trails who told me like their why is they had a grandparent that had at early age had heart problems and couldn't do sport, and they feel like they've got this like body that they can use.
Mm.
Your why can be a child that you like want to, that's the kind of parent I want to be. I want to set an example of like, you can do hard things. Your why can be so many things, but it's your why.
Yeah.
And you can't take someone else's why. It's got to come from within.
Yeah.
Because ultra trail running, like Aaron always says, my coach always says, he doesn't know why he coaches it, because you can do everything right and 90% of the time it goes wrong.
Yes.
So if you don't have a why, it really is hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like the most unfair, horrible, horrible sport, ultra trail running specifically. Like it will just throw curveballs at you, whether it's the weather or nutrition or like your stomach going, nope, not today.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So that's, it sounds airy-fairy, but if you think about it, like having something to drive you is probably the most important for all hard things.
I'm so glad that you are still in it, that you still love the sport. I'm just like, I need somebody's honest opinions and motivations on Instagram to keep me to keep me going. But Naomi, how do you plan for the future after something like this to make sure that you, like, you're still staying true to yourself, being brave, picking the races that if you'd had a great run at UTMB that you wouldn't hesitate to enter, you know? Because I think it can also be easy to retreat a little or go, oh, maybe I should pick something shorter or easier or not such a stacked field.
Mostly stubbornness. I think I had a big chat. I think it's important for me to have someone that know me and know my training. So I have a very good coach for that. Also a very understanding partner that see me train every day. And they sometimes have to tell me how capable I am when I stop believing it myself. So I think that's one of the most helpful things for me so far, is having someone that goes, you can do it. It was a bad day. Like, show me some stats, like, this is how fit you were, this is what you did. I think I sat with Aaron afterwards and we had a big chat, and he said, well, if you can do a long run, improve your salt intake and not get nauseous, then it means you can still run UTCT. And so, yeah, voice of reason, I think, has been, because I get in a spiral of negativity sometimes, like we all do, and like feel sorry for myself a little bit and think never again. And yeah, like I said, there's so many races that have become incredibly popular, like Western States, and I would probably come back as a ghost if I don't ever run it. So I have to run it. It's just become stacked. That's a separate thing, but it's on my list. Like, I think, yeah, there's just so many things I want to still tick off. And I letting something like the competition take that away from you is a shame. I think...
Yeah, that's so good.
It's such a wonderful sport. On good days and bad days, you're going to meet wonderful people. You're going to see a new place that you might never, ever see on any other way. Like, I'm just in love with the sport. I think that comes through for me every time. But yeah. I've definitely had months even after a couple of disasters in a row where I gave myself some time off. And I think that's also important. Forcing yourself to run when your inner works is a bit painful. I remember sending a message to Aaron after Tarawera 1 year saying, I'm angry at running for now. I'm a bit angry with running and I'm not going to run. So I think allowing yourself some time off when you really need it. I know my friend Tony believes in this as well. She takes a time off every single year, a couple of weeks, a couple of months even, to get that motivation and just like those intrinsic things in place. Step away a little bit from social media, from what other people are doing, and just play in the mountains. Find the joy in it. And then naturally you'll be playing on some mountain and you're like, oh, but maybe I should do Madeira because that looks so beautiful.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It creeps back in before you know it.
Yeah. And just let it come out of that like fun and light place. Yeah, not a place of pressure.
Wanting to prove yourself. Like I've done that before where you come out of a bad race and then immediately want to enter the next best thing to show people that was just a bad day. And it works out sometimes, but that's the wrong reason. And so most of the time it doesn't. Like, and your body obviously failed or didn't cooperate on that day for a reason. You might have overtrained, and going straight back into that is not going to fix it. Stepping back sometimes give you a bit more perspective, and then choosing a race out of wanting to do it or whatever, rather than that, is always better. But I've made many mistakes. I mean, I'm saying this and I've done all those things. So I'm definitely not preaching to myself as well. I didn't want to enter UTCT until I'm home and I've made peace with UTMB, and just hearing about the race and talking to people I usually see there almost made me think, like, I can't miss out on that. But I didn't want to just immediately jump into the next thing and give myself a bit time to process. But yeah.
That's great.
Those are my five things.
So UTC 200 milers, what's up next on the cards?
Yeah, I mean, great. Can't miss that one. Yeah. I've done every single one so far. There's only been, been two. And I do think that this year it'll be more enjoyable because I'm a bit more fit, hopefully. Yeah. You never know. I can be sick for the next couple of weeks and then it's the same. But yeah, the routes change slightly. And since the first day Stu told me about his idea to have a 100 miler, I think I'm one of the first people he told just because I was so excited about the potential of running so far on Table Mountain. It's just been like a no-brainer for me.
It's amazing.
It's really hard, though. I must say, on a world, because I've raced in a few places in Europe and Oceania and America, UTCT is like low-key one of the hardest.
It's crazy.
The terrain, just relentless. Yeah.
Oh my word. Yeah, that's Milo. I think, like you said, it's amazing that there is 160Ks of trail in the middle of the city.
Yes.
But there's...
Absolutely.
There's technical sections, there's beach sections, and there's just relentless climbs everywhere on the route. There's no like respite of like, oh, now you've got like an easy section on UTCT. Yes. There's no such thing.
No, there's no. I was thinking about the other day, probably the most you'll run this time around, there's a bit of tar road, but it's short little sections in between, but it's from beach to boulder to climb to like, yeah. Hard work.
We watched... one of the, is it Dimitri's Russian guy?
Oh, he made it look easy. That's unfair.
Then they interviewed him at the finish line and they were like, what are your first thoughts on the course? And he literally grabbed the mic and he's like, if I never see another rock again, it will be too soon.
Hillary Ellen had the same. She's like, when are you supposed to run?
It's like the technicality of the trail speaks for itself. Yeah.
True.
And Naomi, ultimate running dream. I mean, you mentioned Western States just now. I mean, that's a crazy miler. Obviously, that's like very famous, very also steeped in history, is their lotto system, everything. It's just, it's such a cool vibe, but also like, I think a true test because race conditions, you basically start in the snow and then you move down. So actually similar to what you do in New Zealand. Is that the ultimate dream or is there something else that's caught your attention as well?
There's more and more popping up. That's the problem. As I always say to Xavier, I don't have enough lives for all these things that I want to do. There's definitely, there's a couple of actually like personal projects like running across New Zealand, doing the Appalachian Trail, things like that I've got on the cards for some time in the future. I obviously want to do things like Tour de Jean and Gobi and all those big races. For now, there's Grand Raid in Reunion.
Cool.
It's been on my list for years. I've actually been entered to it a couple of years where I couldn't go and then COVID and all sorts of things. Very high on my list. Hard Rock's very high on my list. Mm. A couple of races
do well at Hard Rock.
America. It's been such a, just I love the wildness of it and the fact that it's so ducking hard. It just looks like my kind of race. And then there's a couple of like, not necessarily races, but trails that I do want to go. There's the high Atlas Trail in Morocco. It's actually a cycling trail, but I've always wanted to go do the like FKT route there. There's routes in the Himalayas that I want to go run. So there's races, personal projects, and just trails I want to go see.
So cool.
But the list, I've got a list on my cupboard and it's keeps like, I've written it all and it keeps like getting little squiggles on the sides and then I have to do a new list and every time the writing's smaller. I've definitely got to get either like win the lotto or grow new legs or something, but there's still so many things I want to do.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm blessed enough to be healthy and hopefully can still enjoy it when I can't compete anymore.
Yeah.
I think for me, hopefully I can put my ego aside and focus on just the being able to do it. And I believe with time I'll get there. I want to start coaching. That's my biggest trail, my biggest adventure yet, I think, is being able to pass on some of the things I learned the hard way. So that's probably my biggest challenge in the future, is to try and do that. I don't know if I'll be a good coach, but I'll try.
I'll try to offer and very real advice. I think being real with people is like 80% of the journey.
I could tell them what not to do for sure. Step A, don't move to the outskirts of the world and race in Europe. I think it's special to be able to pass on things you learn. And that's definitely been something that's helped me, especially from women in the field who has been so kind to help and join you and give advice. So,
and back you.
Yeah, exactly.
And round off question, I can't believe it's coming to an end. This has been such an interesting chat. What is something that you've read recently that's inspired you? A book, a quote?
Hitting a blank. I'm a very big fan of podcasts, and so I listen to what's the book's name? I'm going to tell you in a sec. Atomic Habits, interview with James, who wrote the book.
Yes,
I think there's so many lessons in that book. You can just keep busy for days. But that's actually where I read about the intrinsic versus extrinsic, or heard about that. And the other thing that he said is I can't ever remember the quote, but I'll send this to you so you can put it in the notes. But basically, you can't get the goal if your systems isn't in place, and you've got to focus on the systems, not the goal. And for me, that's been a massive mind change. I knew this, but the way that he puts it. And another thing that he said is every habit is a vote for the person that you want to be. And I think if you think about that, everything you do, that translates to how you treat people, how you run. For me at UTMB, I didn't want to like DNF, have a tantrum, have a cry. That's my UTMB. I didn't want to be that kind of athlete. Yeah. I worked really hard on picturing, like, if there's a little girl watching this race, what vote do I want to cast to this person that I want to like be for younger athletes, for other women in the field, for people along the road? Like,
wow.
And I think if you constantly think about that, like how you react, how you like handle things, is a vote for the ultimate person that you want to be and remembered as one day. And I'm working hard on that. I've put it like large in my diary.
Yeah, it's
amazing. So yeah.
I love that, casting the vote with your habits, like the person you want to be. Because that's like an accumulation of lots of little things.
You can't change yourself in a day. But every small little thing, like instead of losing your mind in the traffic, like thinking, okay, well, everyone's frustrated, or at a race, like if it doesn't go well, smiling and laughing at yourself, like that might be, someone might see that and think, oh, I can do that as well. I don't have to get upset or pull out, or I don't know. It's just, it's a process for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah. Naomi, this has been so cool. I really love,
pleasure.
Yeah. Just like, being able to take risks, deal with disappointments, the adventure lifestyle. I think there's a lot more to you than just your running performance. I mean, you know that, but being able to live in a certain way, care about the environment, take an adventure and move into a van. I'm just like this. If anyone's having one of those, I'm at my desk 8 to 5 and trapped in the kind of rat race. I think this will be inspiring to just, there are ways to do things differently and think outside the box. Yeah.
Yeah, you only live once, eh? It's a cliche, but yeah, I try and make the most of it.
And we're all eyes on you for UTCT. We back you, and just to have a great run on your home trails, I think that would be a great reward to round off the year.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, and thanks for doing. I think, you guys interview amazing people, but the stories wouldn't be out there if you're not the ones telling them. So thank you for being a voice for in the trail running world and getting stories out there. It's super cool. Didn't used to be a thing when I was here, and it's so good to see a couple pop up, and especially women doing it. I think yes. that's very, very cool. So yeah. thank you.
Yeah, of course, you guys have to live these things so we can talk about it. But yeah, I always feel inspired. Yeah.
Thanks, thank you.
Debbie. No worries.